Hello and welcome back. I'm Clayton Pixton.
And I'm Susan Easton Black.
And this is Joseph Smith, Impressions of a Prophet with Susan Easton Black. And we also have with us today my sweet, lovely daughter.
Hi, guys.
Her name's Olivia, but we call her Oa. So if I say Oa, that's her. And today we're talking about independence. What else do we know about what we're talking about, Susan?
They had several titles for independence, including New Jerusalem and Zion. And you and Oa live pretty close to it.
We live 40 minutes away from independence. If you go to a map app and say, how long does it take to get there? 40 minutes. So, yeah, we're pretty close, pretty lucky.
Okay, I figure you'll be the experts on site here.
Well, we'll see about that. All right, so for our little intro hymn today, this is why I brought Oa along. She is going to help us out. So we're going to switch places and do that.
Okay.
Ready? Go.
Lord, dismiss us with thy blessing. Fill our hearts with joy and peace. Let us each thy love possessing, triumph in redeeming grace. Oh, refresh us, oh, refresh us, traveling through this wilderness. Oh, refresh us, oh, refresh us, traveling through this wilderness.
Thanks we give and adoration for the gospel's joyful sound. May the fruits of thy salvation in our hearts and lives abound. Ever faithful to the truth, may we be found. Ever faithful to the truth, may we be found.
Okay.
That was great.
Thank you. I did a good job, didn't I, Susan, raising her? Okay, Susan, take us away, please.
All right. Well, tonight, as we talked about, our topic is independence. And notice how we're going to be talking about independence. It is the farthest town west in the entire United States. So when you say independence, you're talking about a frontier town. And right off from it comes the Spanish Trail. So you'd say, who lived in frontier towns then and perhaps now? And you get a little bit of a more wild group than you would think of perhaps even independence today. You'd say you've got frontiersmen that are coming to trade their pelts that have been out west. Wearing beaver caps was a big deal back then. You get the Spanish trail, so you've got traders coming along that trail. You've got in town, you've got the entrepreneurs trying to make it big. You've got people that have run away from the law. You've got the Native Americans are there. So independence is a real smorgasbord town as we look at it in 1831. But by the time we finish today, Clayton and Oa, we're going to be calling it the New Jerusalem. So as we do so, we now look to see who are the first Latter-day Saints that we know of that actually stepped foot on independence, and it will be our four missionaries to the Lamanites. So you've got Oliver Cowdery, you've got Parley P. Pratt, Peter Whitmer Jr., and Ziba Peterson. These four men literally are going to travel 1,600 miles, most of it on foot, to be able to get to their place of mission, which is independence. So as we look at a map, you can see where they've come from. You look up in the corner, you'll see Palmyra, Fayette, Manchester. We've talked about those a lot. Colesville Harmony, where Joseph met Emma. And as they take off from Western New York, they go to Kirtland, and then they travel from Kirtland all across this kind of rugged wilderness to get out to our farthest town west, Independence. And notice it's in Jackson County. And Jackson County is named for Andrew Jackson. He was the first people's president in the United States. And when Andrew Jackson became president, a commoner, you know, that doesn't come from the aristocracy, you know, the people living out there in the 13 colonies that have big, large land grants. When Andrew Jackson becomes president, people start saying, well, we can call our children anything. You know, there's no end to what they can be. So you get some people starting to call their children president. You get another woman, she calls her son King Follett. In other words, my son can be anything. After all, Andrew Jackson became president. It's at the same time that people in the United States, they start calling each other ladies and gentlemen. And over in England, they're saying, you upstarts, you insurrectionists, you are not ladies and gentlemen, you are commoners like your president, Andrew Jackson. So it's Independence and then Jackson County, Missouri. Well, as they come into town, they come into the town square. Here featured is men that have been out west that have come in now trying to sell their wares. And you get what we talked about, those that have taken the old Santa Fe Trail coming up, having gone through Kansas where you guys live, and all out to Colorado and what we call New Mexico and Oklahoma. And here's showing kind of early Independence. Early Independence, you'd say they had a town square, which is pretty typical for the Midwest. They'd throw up literally a courthouse, a place where all civic kind of events occurred. You know, the kind of mayor elected officers would have offices in this courthouse. And then surrounding the courthouse would be the business district of town. And then going out from there, you've got your farmlands. So that's a kind of look at early Independence. You'd say, who is one of the most prosperous entrepreneurial men that have moved to Independence? Well, it's Lilburn W. Boggs, who has married a banker's daughter. And so with money in hand, he has left St. Louis, which they called St. Louis, and he's come out to Independence, and he runs literally one of the largest trading posts, like a general store, where if you're the fur hunter, beaver trapper, where are you going to come and kind of bargain with your pelts? Well, you're going to bargain with a man named Lilburn W. Boggs, who will go from that position to ultimately becoming governor of the state of Missouri, and ultimately being the governor that has the audacity to issue an extermination order against the Latter-day Saints. Now, as the four missionaries, after they have trekked this 1,600 miles, they arrived in Independence, and one of the first men they met was Lilburn W. Boggs. And remember the four men, you get Parley and Oliver and Ziba, and then this Peter Whitmer Jr. Peter Whitmer Jr. will actually move in and live in Boggs' home to sew him a suit. That Peter Whitmer on the side was a tailor by trade, and he was the one of the missionaries that's making money while he's out there on the mission to try and support them as they travel. And so he makes a suit for Boggs. Another man that's very famous that's in that town is Alexander Doniphan. He's a bachelor at the time in 1831 as the missionaries have now arrived. And Doniphan is an attorney by trade. And he's exceptionally good. He's not scholastic. He's not academic in any sense, but he's theatrical. And when you don't have a movie theater or plays or can listen to great musicians like you guys, you'd say, what's fun to do in a little town like that? And you'd say you'd want to go to the courthouse if Alexander Doniphan is defending anyone. And what he liked to defend were criminals. He'll ultimately have 188 cases before the Supreme Court of the state of Missouri. So you've got some prominent men there, and you'd say Peter Whitmer Jr., he's a busy guy. He actually makes a suit for Alexander Doniphan. So I would assume if you needed fancier clothes back then, you'd want to go to one of the missionaries, to the Lamanites, and say, you know, stop preaching the gospel. Hey, I need a suit. So those are your two big men in town that become famous in Latter-day Saint history. We'd say out there in Independence, one of the things that really marks the town is that you've got a river going through. And I know I've been stopped several times on the bridges out there, but you've got the Missouri River. And you'd say, well, why is this significant? We're going to find that as Joseph is leaving Independence and going home and crossing the Missouri River, that he indicates that Satan was riding on the waters of the Missouri. And so you'd say, well, wait a minute, why would he be there? I mean, he's got the Atlantic Ocean, the Pacific Ocean. I mean, he could just cruise for days out there, you know, the butterfly stroke, he's, you know, whatever he's doing. Why would he choose the Missouri River? You know, he's got the Amazon, he's got, you know, the Mississippi. And the answer is, as the Latter-day Saints are coming, and they want to establish a Zion community, and they want to ultimately build temples there in Independence.
And that's why.
That's it. So then you look and you'd say, well, what's the farthest kind of outpost of the United States? And perhaps you two have been there, but it was Fort Leavenworth, and still functioning today. But once you got to Fort Leavenworth, that was kind of the guard place, and then you're really into Indian territory. And you had to get permission from the Indian agents out there at Fort Leavenworth to be able to go beyond Fort Leavenworth. So you'd say
they kind of didn't know that at the time. Would that be fair to say that they didn't maybe realize they had to get government permission?
Yeah, so you'd say, here's your missionaries to the Lamanites. They just thought, hey, we just go beyond Independence, and suddenly you get an Indian agent at Fort Leavenworth. We're saying, no way. You know, we're not going to be responsible. We're not having you out there talking to anybody. And if you've read the Book of Mormon, there's quite a bit of warfare in it. And we're not about to have you go beyond Independence. So it'll be ultimately very frustrating for these missionaries to the Lamanites. If you were to say, did they have a chance to speak to Native Americans along the way? And you'd say, sure, from New York, you know, all the way through, they're speaking to different tribes. But we actually don't know of any Native Americans that will join the church as a result of their efforts. And so as they now confront this Indian agent, the decision is made that Oliver, you stay in Independence. You know, he's kind of your head guy. And so he's going to stay in Independence. Ziba Peterson will stay there. Also, let's have Peter Whitmer still stay here. He's got quite a business going with his suit making, right? And so, Parley, you head back and try and find Joseph Smith along the trail and tell him the news that although we've been called on this mission, we are now thwarted. So Parley now heads out. As Parley heads out, he finds that Joseph Smith is already on the trail. He's heading to Independence. And you'd say, why is he coming to Independence? I mean, he's been to Kirtland. All the saints are gathering in Kirtland. And during a conference there in Kirtland in June, Joseph Smith has received a revelation that the next conference, it should be held in Independence. And the Lord has actually said, take some Latter-day Saint men, divide them two by two. You got all these kind of missionaries, have them go different directions as they work their way towards Independence. But the next conference meet there. And so Joseph, Sidney Rigdon, leaders are on the trail, and they're heading to Independence. Now, as they arrive in Independence, your kind of big happenings will be in August 1831. In August 1831, Latter-day Saints will meet where we now know is that kind of Temple Square in Independence. And among the leaders that were there was Sidney Rigdon. It will be Sidney Rigdon that dedicates literally the entire state of Missouri, not just Jackson County, to the Lord and to the building now of Zion, which is a huge concept. You know, you gather to Kirtland, but if you've been called and you elect to go to Independence, then you're about to build Zion. Now, during that same August, we're going to find that as you're looking at now the land, some will call it a lot of prairie land. Sidney Rigdon gave a description which was not as favorable, but actually pretty beautiful out there where you live. We're going to find during that same time that they're meeting up there on the temple site that Joseph Smith will dedicate that specific area that they're standing on. So notice you get Sidney Rigdon is dedicating the entire state, but on August 3rd, 1831, Joseph Smith will dedicate then this site for the temple, which will be built in the city of Zion. And so this becomes now a very sacred site, and this was actually the first temple site that was dedicated by the prophet Joseph Smith. Now, what's significant about this site is that it's actually 64 and a fourth acres. So where you're looking at kind of the map of what will ultimately be at least the proposed Zion community, where you see the three dark squares in the middle, that's where the saints were to build not just one temple, but 24 interconnected temples. And it appears that the temples would look a lot like the Kirtland Temple, you know, almost this straight up, you know, roof on the top, almost a salt box kind of look. But each of the 24 temples was named. And you'd say of the 24 temples, 21 actually had a priesthood name. Like, for example, there would be a temple for the high priests. There would be a temple for the deacons. My, they'll need to change, right? So a temple for the deacons. There will be a temple for the sons of Levi to offer an offering unto the Lord. And each of them you would look and you'd say definitely a priesthood function until you come to 22, 23, 24. And those temples are different. For Joseph Smith, the time period in which he lives, I mean, there's not even Pony Express, there's no telegraph. And Joseph will say strictly they will be for communication purposes. And we can now look in our century and we'd say, oh, yeah, communications. How do you get the word of the Lord out to everybody? You're going to need a pretty strong communication center. So here's now looking at them, kind of a reversal where you get the three in the middle would be where the 24 temples would be built, the 63 and a fourth acres, and then see all the land around it in squares like a grid. That's your lands of inheritance. So if you came to Independence from Kirtland, you would receive a land of inheritance, which was part of your stewardship. And you can see how those are divided up. You'd get an inheritance in town, and then you'd get property in which you would farm.
There are these kind of long strips, the part in town.
Long strips are the part in town. And this grid system we see replicated over and over again. For any of our listeners that have, say, been to Salt Lake City, you get first north, second south. You know, 8th East, you know, something, da-da. And what you see is the grid system repeats itself again and again and again, where you have wide streets. They wanted where you could take a wagon and you could actually do what we would call a U-turn without having to back up the horses or the oxen. So you get the wide streets with the idea the land in the middle between the streets, at least in Independence, would be called your lands of inheritance. Now, as we look at this 63 and a fourth acres, you can imagine this is really prime property. And as we get near to the second coming, you know, we'll become, you know, incredibly more and more valuable, you know, in the earth. You'd say there are several churches that claim a piece of that land. This is showing the Hedrickite Church, or the Church of the Temple Lot. They are the ones that claim that the first temple will be built on the 3 acres that they own. If you were to look at this kind of from an aerial view, you get this kind of look. You'd say, well, what's on that land? You've got our church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, has a visitor center. And we have a stake center. We've got a mission office. We've had a family history center. At one point, we had a printing office there. But you can also see, you've been on the side, YouTube, been to the Community of Christ Auditorium. Mm-hmm. And perhaps you've been to the Community of Christ Temple, where you get the universal look of a seashell as it spirals up. The Community of Christ owns by far the largest portion then of that site. There's a restoration church that has an old high school just off the site. And you've got Missouri Railroad has a small portion going through. So ultimately, we're looking at where at one point there will be 24 interconnected temples. Well, as Sidney Rigdon then dedicated the site, the whole state of Missouri, Joseph Smith, the temple site, we now turn to Edward Partridge. He's come up from Kirtland as one of those that's come in the group. He's now the bishop, and Edward Partridge is told to stay in Independence and to literally receive the saints and to begin buying land that will ultimately be the temple site, as well as lands of inheritance. If you were to say, where is Edward Partridge getting the money? I particularly like this. Martin Harris was one of those twosomes that came from Kirtland, Ohio. And Martin Harris literally kicked in the first money, $1,200. And he's willing to literally give $1,200 so that Edward Partridge can begin buying then that. I mean, it's one thing to dedicate the site, but you've got to be able to purchase the site, right? And yeah. So he's the first to contribute. In the meanwhile, Joseph will now return to Kirtland, Ohio, and he will begin to call specific saints to go up to Zion. Notice when we say going to Zion, it doesn't matter geography anymore. If you go to Zion, you always go up.
Always up.
You know, it's like Jerusalem. No matter where in the world you live, you go to Jerusalem, you're always going up to Jerusalem. And so he now begins to call the saints to go up to Zion. And he will call heads of households who will then speak for their entire family. And you realize sometimes a family could be like a family home evening cover, you know, mom, dad, kids all lined up, white shoes are all perfect. But typically families that have come into the church, it might be a mom and dad, but it could be a cousin and could be an uncle. And, you know, there's this big configuration. So when I think of my family, you know, it's not just my husband and myself, but before you know it, you know, I belong to a family ward, you know, and I like all my friends, so I would be a big group you're going to be speaking for. Well, the big question, as they're called, they're going to be asked certain questions. And here comes the issue. Many are called, but few are chosen.
It's Joseph Smith and doing all these personally, doing the kind of interviews.
Yeah, personal kind of interviews. And so everyone is asked to gather to Kirtland, but only a few are called to go up to Zion to make their calling and election sure. In other words, I elect to go, therefore I'm going to go up to Zion. I'm going to make my calling and election sure so that I can build a city of Zion. Now, for some of our listeners, they may want to read Doctrine and Covenants section 42. As you so the big question becomes, here are questions Joseph's going to ask. Do you keep the Lord's commandments? And right away, I don't know about you, Clayton, but I have to go, hey, could you give me a couple of weeks? I'm not ready to go up to Zion.
All the commandments?
Yeah, all the commandments. Yeah. And then, do you remember the poor? Well, you'd be amazed how many homeless I passed by. So, you know, how are you doing on remembering the poor? Are you willing to build a storehouse where extra goods I have I might put in so that others could have them rather than these are mine? And here's one that would probably stop me in my tracks. Are your garments, meaning your clothes, are they the workmanship of your own hands? And, wow, it's been a long time since I've done that one. And then here's one that might stop some, but, you know, will you not be idle? In other words, are you kind of like a workaholic? I think I'd probably be pretty good there, but, you know, I guess depending on the day, you know, am I the one that could just kick back, get popcorn, pizza, watch TV all night, you know, movies? So, and then are you willing to care for the sick? And the priesthood men, can you lay your hands on the head of someone and they will be well? So you can imagine with just these few and not going into every question, not everyone that was called to go up to Zion was ready to go. Because notice they're responding not just for themselves, but for their family, extended family. And you could say, well, hey, I'm ready to go and so-and-so is ready to go, but gosh, you know, my cousin 12th removed, maybe not. So let's see what we're doing. And then it was the issue, are you willing to consecrate everything you have to the Lord? And so with that, here we go. you'd say, as the individuals are going about 800 miles from Kirtland, when they arrive in Independence, they've got their wagon and everything they own they brought with them. They then speak with Edward Partridge. And he wants to know, what of what you brought are you willing to consecrate to the Lord? The best documented is Titus Billings, who comes up from Kirtland. He's actually written out a list of everything he owns. I have X number of shirts, pants, you know, I've got shoes, I've got this, I've got that. You know, he's got an itemized list. I only had one time where a bishop wanted to know what was in my food storage, and you know, I needed to provide him with an itemized list, and he's going, you don't have enough sleeping bags, you know. But okay, Edward Partridge, he now wants to know, what have you brought? And then of this, what are you willing to consecrate to the Lord? If you indicate it's all the Lord's, then he will then give you a stewardship. And every single time I've seen the stewardship is you get all those things back, but now instead of owning them, you have a stewardship. I mean, would we all take better care of our lawns? You know, would our houses be cleaner, you know, if we thought we had a stewardship, you know, even our talents? And so as part of the stewardship you received back, you would also receive then your land of inheritance in town. Now, the best way to explain this goes like this. And we'll now see. Okay, it's a circle and a square. You read a lot in scriptures about the four corners. You know, they're sent on missions to the four corners of the earth. You know, east, west, north, south. And we know that Nauvoo is like a corner stake. Well, lands of inheritance, you put literally the square in the middle of the circle. And so the square you divide up like a grid that we talked about with the 24 temples in the middle, lands of inheritance filling up the square. But you'll notice as you put the square in the middle that there will be extra land on the outside. That land was land to be farmed. So every year as we do like a tithing declaration under this law of stewardship, as you would meet again with Bishop Partridge, the question was, how much of that kind of unincorporated land on the outside are you willing to farm? In my case, being older with a husband, you know, a little bit handicapped right now, you'd say, boy, what's the least I can get away with? But in your case, Clayton, you and Oa, you'd probably go, hey, we're good for it. Give us 10 acres, yeah. You know, 20 acres, I don't know, whatever it is. And then whatever you grew in that kind of area that was not covered by the square would then go into the storehouse to be used for the poor.
So then you're steward over your possessions that you brought.
Right.
What kind of sharing, I guess, is going? And is this the time where they were basically living the law of consecration?
Right.
Where that began? Okay.
So was there... Independence, first place they're going to live law of consecration.
So, I'm just curious how that works. Like, would they, you know, if somebody needed something, would they borrow and lend? Or are they permanently, like, putting stuff to the storehouse and then that goes to the poor?
Right. It's more of a putting it to the... I mean, you know, we're all in theory, right? Because it's all going to fall apart. But...
Right.
In theory, your bishop is always the key man. So you'd put it in there, and then the bishop would make the decision, much like perhaps today, you know, who needs assistant and how much, right?
Would there ever be a case where it's like, oh, this person needs this? Well, nobody has it. It's not in the storehouse, but let's ask this
right.
family.
So the plan was... you know, say in this area, say everybody planted wheat, there were to be these circle square things where to literally go, you know, cover your whole state of Missouri, right? And so say in another area, maybe they raised pigs, you know, in another area they did this, and then you get it, the trading back and forth.
Okay.
I think we got it, right? Okay, we now look at the gathering process. So recall, everyone gathers to Kirtland. Only the call who elect to go up to Zion now gather to Independence. Notice the contrast. You know, you'd say the best of the best, right? The Latter-day Saints are heading to Independence. But notice who lives there. They are out there in the frontier town. They are interacting with the beaver hunters, the pretty adventurous that have been up and down the Spanish Trail and all the others. And they're heading out there confident the Lord knows their name and that the Lord has given them this land.
And it's not an empty town.
It's not an empty town.
Kind of like sending Abraham's posterity to the land of Israel or whatever.
Right. It's very, very similar. Okay, so we're going to find, do we melt in with a society? As we look, we'll say, here we come. We're heading out to the farthest place. We've got the Missouri River to contend with and all we've learned about that. But you'd say, here we come, and we're now setting up shop. So, for example, Algernon Sidney Gilbert and Newell K. Whitney, who had a store in Kirtland. You get, they're going to establish a branch of that store in Independence. And here's what it looked like when it was abandoned, and then you're going to see what it looked like when it was kind of brought back to how it looked at the time period, or at least restored. but the Gilbert and Whitney store, where is it? And you'd say, well, it's across the street, of course, from the courthouse, because everybody, yeah, all their businesses are just you. You're at the courthouse, you do your shopping. It's kind of like a one trip, and the store is right there. You'd say, here comes W.W. Phelps. W.W. Phelps, where is he going to set up his printing press? Well, it's going to be right across the street, then from the courthouse, right? And notice the newspaper that he will establish, which is the first newspaper in the church, the Evening and Morning Star. Notice we would always say the Morning and Evening Star, but it was, we live on the Saturday eve of the morning of the coming of the Savior. Thus, my newspaper is the Evening and Morning Star. So they're all around the square. Well, how many saints then came to Independence from 1831 to 1833? I think what's so phenomenal is that literally 1,200 saints agreed to live the law of consecration, received their stewardship, so they're now living the law of stewardship, and more on the way. Well, is it good news for the old settlers? And the answer is no. Suddenly, here come people confident that they are going to establish Zion and a new Jerusalem, and that the word of the Lord will be coming to Independence. And it's kind of like you try to see, will they mesh together in society? And the answer is absolutely not. The old settlers is just like trying to mix oil and water, and no matter how you cut it and how much property that Bishop Partridge was able to acquire, you're still a frontier town. And as a result, we're going to find by 1833 that although we have tried to build the ideal, the ideal never really happened. And you'd say, well, why is that? And I'd say, selfishness on the part of the saints. You know, we're better than thou on the part of the saints. You know, you can look at all of that, and you could look at the settlers saying, wow, there's so many of you coming. You know, pretty soon we're all going to live on mitered streets. And we're all going to live on, you know, lands of inheritance, and you're going to be our political leaders because you're going to outpopulate us. And next time that we talk, Clayton, we're going to talk about the fall of this incredible idea of Zion. So I guess my question to you and Oa, has Zion ever been removed?
Has it been removed from?
I mean, are we no longer, is independence just a hope of the past way back in the 1830s, or is it still something we consider today?
Interestingly, no, right? It's still, yeah. It's still the designation. It's just pushed, I don't know if pushed off is the right term, but we know that it hasn't happened yet, and the Lord kind of ended up saying, well, he delayed it or said it, you're not ready or something to that
for
effect.
For a season. We're going to wait for a season. One thing I learned about this is that when the saints went there, they were pretty anxious to build their own homes and to get their shops all set up, like the, you know, the Phelps Printing Press and others. But what did they not do? They never did build their temples. And so the message to me is, wow, if we're called and we can and elect to go up to Zion.
It's got to be the first thing you do.
Yeah, live in a pup tent. We'll all come stay with you. And, you got to build those temples. So although first temple announced and first temples never built.
Yep, yet to be built. So we have a temple here now. It's not there, but it's in the area.
It's pretty close. Out there in Liberty, right?
Yep. Dedicated in 2012. That was actually her her birthday, right?
My eighth birthday.
On your eighth birthday when it was dedicated. Oh, that's great.
So she got an early morning interview, and then her and her sibling, so she's a triplet, they were able to go to the dedication.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Yeah. And then we were baptized on the same day, so it was a big
Oh, that big is birthday. A huge yeah. deal. Oh, that's wonderful.
Yep, but it's not the temple.
Right.
But we're very grateful to have it, because before we had to go to St. Louis, 4 hours away, or
right.
Winter Quarters they built recently, which is 3.5 maybe hours away. And,
uh-huh.
Before those, people would have to go to Texas or or whatever. So grateful to have it. Well, I've made my daughter stay and listen, and it's great to have her. And,
thanks, so I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Of course.
So, but she's going to grace us with another version of that same song. So we'll switch again. By the way, that particular arrangement does happen to be on my CD, Hymns Anew. We also want to give a little plug for a certain title. Susan, you want to tell us about that?
Right. This Joseph Smith, Impressions of a Prophet, beautiful book, will soon be out, featuring Liz Lemon Swindle, one of the premier artists of our time, the official artist for The Chosen. And also the first artist that's literally painted Joseph's life from beginning to end. So in the book, you'd find 50 literally painting sketches of Liz, and this complements her work.
That's right. So we're going to keep mentioning that because, we feel like the podcast and that book complement each other. And so there you go. Guys, thanks for being here. Thanks, Oa, for being with us.
You're welcome.
Oa is a student at UVU right now. It's a college student, but Susan turned in her mission papers. Or is in the process.
I'm almost done with them. Yeah. I just
is great.
I have a dentist appointment next Wednesday, and then once that's done, I'm basically good to meet with my stake president and submit my papers. So.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yep. Continuing on with the work, newer generation. Well, Susan, any parting words, and we'll tell our listeners.
So just thanks for those that are listening. Next time we meet, we're going to talk about the fall of Zion and Joseph's efforts to redeem Zion. And I hope none of our listeners will want to miss that. It's a great story.
All right, guys. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time.